Whereas music in the classroom and in school, I don't think is reflective enough of what music is in the outside world. And especially now with the access children have to different styles of music, when you get back into the classroom, I don't think we've evolved quick enough, and I don't think we are reflecting what they're listening to outside and being able to show those pathways well enough. And I think that's a lack of the joined up thinking between the industry and education.
Hello again, I'm Joe Sparrow, Music Allies editor, and we are joined this week by Ben Lewis, CEO of Young Voices, and Anna Phoebe, who's a composer, also performs with Young Voices, and as well is on the board at the Ivors Academy. So what is Young Voices? Well, it is an organization that arranges huge, really huge, arena-sized choir performances with school children and young people. And so we wanted to speak to them about the importance of music in the lives of children, the people who are the seeds of the grassroots, if you like, and what encouraging young people and children to sing and perform together does for them and does for society in general. All of that in just 1 minute. Now, if you're not familiar, each Music Ally episode looks at one meaningful music business story at a time, and therefore this podcast is going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Brendan Kelby could stack, hypothetically, of course, 150 dice with 1 foot. Brendan stacked 5 with his foot in 1 minute in 2022. Brendan, he says, loves stacking dice. And all the power to him. We say stacking dice with your feet is as good a waste of time as any. Now, talking of rolling the dice, most parents don't want to do that when it comes to the future prospects and education of their children. Music, of course, is an important part of everybody's life, and it's important to the development of children. So we spoke to Ben and Anna about the importance of music and performing together, the unifying effect of these huge shows that they put on, and as well as the state of music education. And we spoke about the need of music education in the talent pipeline for supplying new, young, talented people into the music industry. We also spoke about the importance of singing and taking part in music, and what that does for children and society and the economy around them. Let's go over to them now. Well, I'm very happy to welcome Ben Lewis, CEO of Young Voices, and Anna Phoebe, composer, performer, and on the board of the Ivors Academy. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here. Now, before we get into this really interesting topic around music education and music and children and young people, can we just get a bit of context? So who are you both? What do you do with Young Voices, and what is Young Voices? Ben, let's start with you, simply because you are the CEO of Young Voices.
So yeah, I'm the CEO, so I'm the boss of Young Voices, and my family founded Young Voices 28 years ago. So me, my father, and my brother, and we put on the largest children's choirs in the world. So I kind of oversee all parts of the organization, you know, from creative all the way through to kind of logistics and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's me.
Just to unpack that a little bit, Young Voices, what is it? What was the intention behind starting it?
So it's the largest children's choirs in the world. And really the intention is to give children, primary school children, the kind of ultimate live music experience by being part of a choir. These choirs go up to around 9,000 children each day in arenas like the O2 in London, Wembley, Manchester, AO Arena, all the biggest arenas. And we do them in both in the UK and in the US. And yeah, have been doing it for 28 years. And in that time, 2.5 million children have taken part.
Wow, great. Okay. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But Anna, I don't want to leave you out. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm a violinist and composer, and I guess I heard about Young Voices many years ago. The band that I was touring with in America, touring 6 years around arenas across the United States. My management at the time, they also kept telling me about this thing called Young Voices, and I didn't think anything of it. And then when I had children of my own here in the UK, one day my daughter, eldest daughter, came back with a letter saying she was going to be performing at the O2 with a thing called Young Voices. And I was like, wait a minute, I know that name. So Ben and I got in contact. I ended up guesting that night with the Beatbox Collective, the night that my daughter was singing in the choir. So we performed together at the O2. And it was such an incredible incredible experience, both as a parent and as a performer, to see the impact just on that one night. And then I got invited in 2023 to be a guest and do the whole 27 arena run.
Oh, wow.
And that was honestly, it's truly one of the most humbling experiences. You know, I've toured with Roxy Music, I've played on stage with Beyonce and Jay-Z. So I've done kind of the remit of really small shows and really big shows, but Young Voices has definitely left an impact. So now, as part of the Ivers Academy, really trying to get that industry support for Young Voices and bring two organizations who I love deeply, bring them together.
Yeah. I will put some videos to Young Voices beneath the podcast so people can sort of really experience it, albeit in video form, not standing in the room with 9,000 or 10,000 people singing. Let's start with the basic question then around the importance of this. We talk, this is a music industry podcast. We have an audience of music industry people. We talk about the end point where music becomes a professional thing and products get made about music and it gets put out there. But this is going all the way back down to the roots of the grassroots, if you like. So why is engagement with music important for children in a very fundamental way?
Well, yeah, I think the two main thing pillars that come out to me are connection and expression. I think, for connection with your family, with your friends, you know, finding your tribe when you're growing up, music has a great way to do that. And I also think from an expression point of view, how music makes you feel, how it can match your mood. These are the things that as children, being involved in music and having music around you gives you those tools to, you know, make you happy, you know, deal with grief, deal with all kinds of things, let out some anger. And I think that, you know, we've always used music in that way. And that's why it's so important to kind of engage with music at a young age, because it, especially for some children, it is the best way for them to engage with others and express themselves and feel part of something bigger than themselves, which I think is a huge part of growing up.
Is that something which, you know, in recent years we've seen sort of the rise of the social networks, a lot of communication that traditionally would have been done face-to-face or not done like this, is done through mobile phones. There's data to show that young people and children spend less time physically together than 15 years ago, pre-social media. So, and at the same time, these people are desperately seeking identity and authenticity through those experiences. When you speak to the young people and children taking part, does that resonate, that idea of seeking that, and does it provide that?
Yeah, and I think that the nice thing about us, and obviously we went through the pandemic where all of what we did was virtual and had to be done through screens, but there's nothing quite like it. You know, for me, music is about experiencing music. You know, a passive playlist or something in the background is no substitute for getting people together in a room and really feeling it. And I think, you know, all our parents, all the teachers that are involved in Young Voices, the idea that children are away from a screen, away from any kind of, you know, contraption that is distracting them, and being part of something way bigger than themselves and connecting with thousands of other children at exactly the same time still holds more power than anything else. And I think it's really important to keep that human connection, because it is fundamentally, you know, it's the core of who we are.
Anna, you are a longtime performer and composer yourself. You've also taken part in these Young Voices events. What did you notice as, you know, someone who has performed on the big stage, you said the big stages with the big stars, but you're then working with, you know, children who are doing something for the sake of enjoyment. What sort of tangible benefits or experiences could you spot in them?
Well, definitely as a parent, seeing how both my daughters now who have taken part, you know, they come home, they're singing the songs, they get their own login, they're practicing. So, I mean, there have been umpteen surveys to show that learning an instrument or doing music has benefits right across all of your curriculum. So these long-term benefits, and that's not my speciality, but just from an experience as a parent, I can see, you know, memory, focus, dedication, hard work. And then not only do they do that in their own spare time? They do that with their teachers. And the teachers sometimes, when I was speaking to a lot of the teachers, some of them aren't music teachers. So they depend on these packs. So they're also learning new skills. So it becomes a bonding thing for the whole school community to get involved in. And then what you see, which is just so magical, there are so many times in the rehearsal, you see when the children first start singing, they realize that these lyrics, these songs that they've been learning, maybe in a group of 10, 20, 50, that suddenly they're part of this huge choir, up to 10,000, 9,000, 10,000 children, all singing the same thing. And not only that, they're supported on stage by world-class musicians, exceptional, exceptional production crew, really top class. I mean, for that, you know, that experience lasts a lifetime, and definitely for my own children and also all the children I spoke to during the tour and the teachers. You know, these are little igniting moments, and you don't know where that leads to. This is the grassroots, but they are the roots and the seeds, I would say. More, they're like grass seeds rather than
roots. We've gone below the roots.
we've gone below the roots
to the seeds.
Yeah, because these moments change your life. And actually, one of the other founding ambassadors, Ruti, she was she's an exceptional singer and songwriter, and she was in the choir, and she said that gave her the confidence and the inspiration to go on and be a singer and be an artist. So not only for those people who perform on stage, but seeing how a whole team that make up the industry, whether it's on and off stage, that can create something so magical and special, for children to have that is just an incredible experience.
I'm interested in these other benefits and how you measure them. What place does it hold in sort of life for children, young people today? Society has changed very, very quickly. Consumption has changed very quickly. Activities have changed very fast as technology has moved. So is this something which is it an easy sell? Is it a thing that they're discovering for the first time because there's not so much attention on this now? How does it sit like that?
Well, I think certainly as an opportunity for the teachers and the parents, and as a sell, it is fairly easy. And it's, I think, as these things have kind of rapidly changed, I think it is an easier sell, because also, as Anna was saying, you know, something on this level in an arena like the O2, the carrot of performing there for, say, a 9-year-old child is massive, because it's the arena they all see on TV. It's where the Brits are. It's where all their big pop stars. But it's also for the parent and the teacher something that's not, you know, something that's, you know, kind of disposable. It's not social media. It's not the technology that everybody's pushing. It's something that keeps them, you know, grounded, keeps them, you know, really focused on something, builds those key elements that Anna was talking about, whether it's resilience or teamwork, or even elements like, you know, for the parents to be able to praise their children. You know, I think that's one of those things where, you know, we saw in the pandemic, it was really difficult because you weren't really doing anything. You were doing homeschooling, just getting through the days. And for something like Young Voices, to be able to walk out and go, oh, I just played the NEC, or I just played Sheffield Arena, your parents are able to really kind of galvanize and say, wow, look at what you've just achieved. And sense of achievement, self-belief, all of these kind of building blocks for young people are so important. And I think that sometimes we overlook them for kind of shortcuts and easy wins, when actually what you want to do is build those elements.
You know, with my Ivers Academy hat on, I would say that Young Voice is such an incredible opportunity to reach not only the grassroots, hopefully the future creatives in the UK, but also the future consumers of music. And I think there's a real opportunity for the industry just as a whole to get behind Young Voices and use this as an opportunity to really teach the value of the creative industry. You know, we've seen it completely thrashed apart in the last decades, and hopefully that's going to change in the future. But, you know, without getting political, it's actually just the way that children, I see my 10-year-old, my 12-year-old, they're on, whether it's TikTok or Spotify. You know, music is now a cheap or free commodity, and it's something to sell skincare, or something to sell, you know, it's to sell other stuff. So actually, the opportunity that we have as the Ivers, you know, an organization which looks after the rights of songwriters and composers and creators, is actually to use these educational tools and materials that Young Voices send out to schools to teach children about the industry that lies behind the song. So even when each song that these children are singing, there's a songwriter or a group of songwriters, and to try and really teach about the industry and the fact that this is a viable industry in the UK, because maybe even if they don't go into it, you know, when they're asked to pay more for their Spotify subscription or Apple subscription, maybe they'll be willing to pay because they realize it's not just something that comes free out of the ether. There are people who are working, and it's a craft.
And these other benefits you've said are associated with events like this. And Ben, like you said, you've done a lot of these big events, so you're touching the lives of a huge number of people. And you published a report that one of the interesting things you mentioned in that report was there was an almost 6 times return in, this is a quote, local economic impact across the host cities of Birmingham, London, Manchester and Sheffield that these events took place in. How do you measure that? And what does that mean about, I think some people might be thinking, okay, how do you connect this kind of cool choir event with children to economic impact?
Well, I mean, economically, I mean, if you think about somewhere like the O2, we're doing 8 nights at the O2 and you're selling out the O2 every night and you're bringing 20,000 people together every night. So when you break it down, I think in terms of the kind of the 6 time return, 70% was attendee spend. So that's, you know, people coming to the restaurants, hotels, you know, local economy from that side. And then roughly kind of 30-35% was the suppliers and the people that we bring in. And that's all, you know, we're a huge production team, 70 people. So it's, you know, our riggers and our production crew and our catering and all the local staff that we all also need, security and all of those elements that come together. So every city that we go to, you know, every single night, there's a lot of money being spent and generated in us putting on a Young Voices show. And, you know, obviously it's going to be less than a big ticket spend because we keep our ticket price very low, probably a third of the price of an average ticket because we want it to be as inclusive as possible. But still, when you look at the numbers, there's very few tours doing, you know, 30 nights in January, February at those kind of size arenas. So yeah, it's you know, for the venues, for the cities that we operate in, you know, they're very happy for us to have, because also a lot of these people are coming from outside the city. Yeah. So somewhere like Manchester with that whole northwest, you know, as far as Liverpool and, you know, Wigan, St Helens, they're all coming to Manchester Arena, but they need a coach to get there. They have to hire a coach and then they come in and they spend time there. So that all has a value to it.
Let's go back to the idea that Anna, you brought up about the talent pipeline that is a vital part of the UK music industry and for every country in the world, of establishing music as a desirable thing to take part in at the very beginning and then seeing that through to completion. Sad closure of a lot of small local venues, for instance, is having a direct impact on opportunities for young people to perform for the first time if they're, you know, putting bands together or doing things like that. But this is a sort of stage before that. How does Young Voices fit into that? And what are those benefits in that talent pipeline?
I think the opportunity for children to have something, a focal point, that they know they're going to be performing on a certain date, to be working towards that performance and then to do the performance and see how everything fits together. Because it's not just about the music talent pipeline. There's a really beautiful moment in the rehearsals. And actually, a lot of the best work goes on in the rehearsals before the show, because that's when, you know, the conductor and the musicians, they really interact with the children. So it's not just about the performance. That's almost the icing on the cake. There's a lot of kind of educational stuff that goes on in the afternoon.
How long is that session?
Is it three hours or something, isn't it? The rehearsal. I mean, it's a good old slog for the MD and the conductor, who are sort of really communicating with the children the whole time. And you kind of think, actually, the first time I went, I was thinking, my God, if they decided to rebel, if the children wanted to take over right now, they could do what they almost don't realize their power that they have right now. But it's incredible.
Don't tell them. You've got that many of them in one place. You don't know what could happen.
Yeah, and it's really kudos to the teachers who kind of control their sort of their gang. And then, but then you have the conductor. But there's this beautiful moment where it's not just about the music. There's a moment when the lighting guys get a chance to show, you know, when they show this sort of lighting effect and you see the children, they can't believe it. They might not have even grasped that there is someone out the front who's, you know, doing the sound. There's someone out the front who's controlling the light. So I think in terms of a talent pipeline, I think it's really important to remember that the music industry is not just about the creators. It's about all the facilitators and the crew. And, you know, when we talk about benefits, it's not just the benefits of the music itself. It's the economic benefits, like Ben just pointed out, the whole infrastructure, the tickets, the ticket sell is just the sort of the first bit of it, isn't it? It's all everything else that the music industry generates. And I think this talent pipeline, I mean, I know because I also do grassroots touring. It's a tough business to actually be viable in this country. And I think the more that we have young people engaged in any kind of performance, any kind of music education, and, you know, Young Voices is filling that gap for a lot of people, I think the better.
And I think just to jump in at the end there, I agree with everything Anna said. And I think that, you know, when you think about talent pipeline, you know, it's a little bit like a pyramid. You know, you need the largest base to start from. And I think that for the children that come through, we've got 200,000 children doing Young Voices now year on year. And you know, the amount of those children that just would not realize what it means to be in this industry. And if you put it in front of them, suddenly you have 200,000 who might gravitate, as Anna said, to be a lighting designer, to be a sound engineer, to be, you know, an artist manager, because they see the jobs happening in front of them. And you cannot be what you cannot see. And so you have to be able to have that put in front of you. And to do that at this kind of age, when they're really hungry and they're, you know, taking it all in like a sponge, it makes such a massive difference. And at the same time, the talent pipeline for the, you know, in inverted commas, the musically talented, you're giving those children that really do have music and it shining out of them, to show them what a professional production looks like, and they can see themselves within that. And that is also a huge part of giving them that idea that maybe I could do this. And, you know, whether they're seeing the bass player or, you know, the guy on synth or whoever it might be, it's kind of that's something that they can see firsthand in that environment.
Well, I think also the way children consume music nowadays, it's not as kind of tribal as it used to be. You know, I used to know exactly who the band members were and who the songwriter and who the artist and who did the packaging of the artwork and all of that. Whereas now it's much more transient. Like, so I think that even what Young Voices did for this tour this year, they had a sort of interview with Tim Minchin. So that, and then that got sent out to the schools. So, I mean, the children, a lot of them will have seen either the musical or the TV, or the film, but they won't have necessarily even thought about the fact that there's a guy called Tim Minchin who sat and wrote the songs. And so for that opportunity to use Young Voices and their educational tools to teach children that there's a guy called Tim who sat and he talks about how he came up with the songs, and the children were invited to send in questions and they were also part of that film. I mean, that's an incredible opportunity.
What is the state of musical education in your opinions? Because this, what we're hearing here is that there are layers of benefit to children learning music and performing in choirs in all these different ways. So it sounds, well, it sounds like a win-win-win, right? But this has to be initiated, and there, you know, outside of what Young Voices is doing, you know, there is a musical education system which is hopefully doing the same thing. But is it doing enough, and is it doing the right thing to bring children through into this?
I mean, talking about the state of musical education is probably a much larger conversation.
If you could fit it into a soundbite, that'd be great.
Is tricky, because I guess the thing about music education is there are so many strands. You know, what we occupy, you know, we're dealing with 4,500 schools, but we only, you know, we touch on one side, that kind of live music at large scale. Well, you know, there are lots of different layers, but in terms of what the kind of the music hubs are doing, the way that the general kind of music in schools, the curriculum, there are a lot of problems. And certainly funding is the number one. I think the funding in terms of how that has been trailing off almost since we started Young Voices 28 years ago, And that is an issue, because I think when you look at the end product, in terms of what you were talking about with grassroots music venues, in terms of the ecosystem, we are a country of music makers, music lovers. We've got world-class production teams. We are the envy of the world in many ways and punch above our weight, but we cannot rely on that for another couple of generations if we are defunding the arts and especially music, whilst other countries around the world do see the value in music and are going in at grassroots and certainly in education to make sure those children have those opportunities. And I think there's that inequality as well in terms of, because I don't think it's a case of people not valuing music education, because if you look at, you know, independent private schools, it's one of the first things you see in a prospectus, their arts offering. The question is who's going to pay for it. And I think that that's where we have, you know, been short-sighted in terms of, you know, consecutive governments. And that's where, I don't want to get too controversial, but that's where there needs to be action to support the whole environment.
And I'll come to you in a second about this, because I know you've got some feelings about this as well. But Ben, on a human level, we all appreciate music. You know, we all love music, and we all we've nailed down the appeal of doing the choir and children doing this together. So, what do you think this disconnect is between saying, okay, yeah, music's great, and hey, doesn't, you know, the UK has punched above its weight and produced the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and David Bowie and blah, 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 blah. But we don't want to, but like, can we keep the money away from encouraging that?
On a philosophical level, yeah, I would say, I mean, my main take on it, I kind of used a sporting analogy that I think, say, football in the playground is the same football that you see on the TV by and large, you know, without VAR, but it's basically the same game. Whereas music in the classroom and in school, I don't think is reflective enough of what music is in the outside world. And especially now with the access children have to different styles of music, when you get back into the classroom, I don't think we've evolved quick enough. And I don't think we are reflecting what they're listening to outside and being able to show those pathways well enough. And I think that's a lack of the joined up thinking between the industry and education. And I think there is so much good going on in schools and in separate projects, extracurricular, but I think there isn't that joined up thinking because there are so many strands. It's very difficult to get any kind of consensus in terms of music education because there are a lot of agendas at play, and you know, all, you know, important, but you can't fix everything at the same time. You can't, when you have that many different, you know, different strands and different journeys. You think about, you know, again, if you're a young footballer going through, it's a pretty straightforward journey. You know, you're plucked, you know, grassroots, academy, go on, get, you know, booked by signed by a team, and then you go on from there. Whereas with music, the pathways are endless. So I think it's very difficult for the people at the top to understand how to engage and how to fund the right things. And that means that you end up having paralysis on that ground level of how to move those elements forward. And I think, you know, consecutive governments and institutions have looked at education and just feel it's too hot a potato and too much of a minefield for them to get involved in. And that's problematic.
I think it's a combination of funding right across the spectrum. I don't know if you remember in lockdown, there was all the musicians who were outside Parliament. You know, these are the professionals at the top of the game who were left with no income stream at all. There was no support for the top musicians. They're world-class musicians. I'm in a WhatsApp group with all of those. And, you know, right now the cuts with the Arts Council, the cuts with ENO, you know, opera, like everything's being slashed. So you actually have the end of the talent pipeline also being squashed. You have music education being squashed. You have a curriculum which possibly in many ways is outdated. And it basically means that a lot of people, you know, we're missing out on so much potential on the grassroots level, actually, because the people, it's private schools, it's people who can afford and then choose to pay for private lessons, private music lessons. And, you know, that just means we're missing out on the potentially the next generation of world-class players who then also need to be supported as they move through their career.
How would you fix it if I gave you the magic wand?
Well, I mean, funding's a start, but it's not everything. I think what I would do is that, as I said before, there are so many great projects at grassroots level. I know youth music really well, Matt Griffiths over there. The amount of great work that's happening, the problem is that it needs to, those flames need to be fanned. We need to support people doing those good things, and we need to create much more of an infrastructure for them to collaborate. And that's where, you know, from Anna's point of view with the Ivors, you know, we worked together, you know, for last year for towards our show, and obviously did the link up on with Tim Minchin and Matilda. You know, there's so much low-hanging fruit that if we just join the dots, we'll have such a huge impact. And I think that that's where, whether it's government, whether it's, you know, Department of Culture, there needs to be a level of framework that brings everybody together and pays for that. Because once you have all those collaborations, when you think about who benefits, you mentioned the economic impact, social impact, you know, just from something like Young Voices, you think about how much the arena benefits from us bringing all those people in. Most of those parents, a lot of them have never been to an arena, because we all think in music, oh, everybody goes to music. They don't. You know, especially nowadays when ticket prices are quite high. But all of those, you know, we have 40% of our parents that go and look at the website and then rebook. That economic impact of that happening. The same with the artist development. There are so many areas this touches. You know, Anna was talking about Ruti and her being part of us. But we had Nandi Bushell with us, the 13-year-old Foo Fighters drummer, tour with us this year. And she went from, you know, performing at an arena with the Foo Fighters once to suddenly having 30 nights in a major arena. You know, the labels aren't doing the artist development that they used to do. And for us to be able to, that's where education can provide. But we need to be all joined up. And so that what we're missing, they're getting over here, because it is a huge ecosystem and it needs to, but it's not working effectively enough in terms of that joined up thinking.
Anna, it's clear that money would help and significant amounts of it here. You represent the Ivors Academy and the Ivors in general. You represent songwriters and composers, and there is a sort of quasi-political part to that as well, where you are trying to persuade politicians to do things differently. Looking forward a bit, without getting explicitly political, we may be heading into a future where there's a new government in the UK. Do you feel positive that there will be more money coming into music education in general in the future?
I think that one telling thing during lockdown was that there was a targeted campaign towards musicians and artists to retrain to work in AI or work in other areas. So I think, and that kind of says it all, the idea that one of the most successful industries and most successful exports is the music industry for this country. So, and I think that while Keir Starmer has set out an arts plan, arts funding, you know, at least it's on the agenda. And actually, funnily enough, we've got a few musicians, you know, Dave Rowntree, he's now, you know, running to be an MP.
From
Blur. There's Tom Gray, who's actually the chair of the Ivors.
He's been on the podcast before.
Has he? Oh, yeah. Yes. So he's obviously this, you know, Gomez. And now he's running to be an MP for Brighton Pavilion, I think it is. So I don't know, hopefully there'll be some kind of change, I think a change in approach to arts. And I think there's the trickle down effect, you know, where we're battling against massive streaming giants and we're trying to protect the writers and percentages, and we're fighting for literally pennies for streams. There's the, you know, whole protection of creators' rights against AI. That's a whole, you know, I know you've covered that in your podcasts. So, I mean, there are so many vast minutiae and macro huge, you know, issues that the creative industry is facing. So a lot of time, a lot of these institutions are, you know, they're not fighting amongst each other, but, you know, that they're arguing different points because they represent, you know, you've got the Featured Artist Coalition who might not necessarily agree with the Ivers on certain points or the BPI. There's so many institutions. And I think the really exciting thing about Young Voices is that this, no one can argue against children and music. There's no one. I have never seen anyone make the argument that music is detrimental to children's mental health, their academic health, their emotional and sort of community health. That no one's made that argument to me, so I haven't heard it. So Young Voices, indisputably, is such an incredible opportunity, an incredible platform for, like Ben said, for all of these different institutions across the industry to get together and to form a cohesive and collaborative approach to what we want the music industry to fight for. And it has to start with the grassroots, but it has to go all the way across, all the way up to the, you know, these musicians, making sure they can pay their rent or their mortgages, and making sure that all throughout artists, musicians, composers, everyone across the industry is fully supported in their careers.
Because I would just add one last thing to that. It is a long-term fight for hearts and minds in terms of the value of music, because you have to change the way that people view that value chain and what music is. And, you know, and I think if you start with young people and give them the best day of their life by performing at a major arena, and you teach them about all the work and all of that hard work that goes into creating that, you start to really get them to understand what it means to be in that world. And I think that that's something that when you then 20 years later have a chat with somebody over in a dinner party about music, they don't simply brush it off and go, oh yeah, I just stream and I get it for free with some adverts. They won't do that, because they do understand the intrinsic value of it.
Well, then you mentioned looking ahead. Let's look ahead. If in 5 years' time, what would the ideal scenario look like if Young Voices had fulfilled its goals?
Well, I think, you know, the really exciting two elements for me, one is international. I think international collaboration. You know, I've just got back from New York and our shows that we do there on the East Coast, and how exciting it is for, you know, for those children also to know that in London that we're doing it in New Jersey or upstate New York, and doing it when we've done it in places like South Africa or Trinidad, doing it in different cultures, different languages. You know, when Anna performed, we had a girls' choir from Saudi Arabia fly in to perform with us at the O2. I think, you know, music is such a connector, and, you know, that idea of having it in multiple cities around the world and having showcasing, because it is a global, you know, project. It's, you know, parents love to see their children perform. Children love to perform en masse. You know, we proved it already. But to make sure that we could get rooted in a lot more cities around the world, and then cross, kind of collaborate culturally and teach different children about different cultures and different languages, is something that I'm hugely passionate about. And I think the second thing is what we've been discussing here about the industry. There is such an opportunity to really make music education and young people, from a Young Voices perspective, reflective of the industry and the industry to feedback. You know, yes, I love the Brit School. Yes, I love certain projects, but they're very small scale. They're very much a small group of people compared to what we have. And then, you know, 200,000 children, that's the amount of people that go to Glastonbury every year. So you're talking about, you know, a generation, and every 2 or 3 years, it's a whole different group of children. So most of them do it for 1 year, some for two. So if you think about, we've had 2.5 million children that have already done it, you know, the next 5 years, that'll be another million just in the UK. So from my point of view, it is about trying to showcase, you know, with the BPI, with PRS, with PPL, with Ivers, you know, all of these incredible institutions. And, you know, we're going to be doing an amazing medley next year, which I can't talk about yet because it's a secret, but it's with an iconic musician who is no longer with us. And working with the music labels behind that, we're doing something really exciting. And those are the things that I think will, because it's cross-generational as well. Parents love it, teachers love it, children love it. And so, yeah, I really, for me, it's that kind of open invitation for the industry to get involved, because I think together we can do something incredibly special.
I think if you put it, you know, if you put it in that way, Ben, if you say, right, we have, as an industry, we have the opportunity to reach 1 million future creators stroke consumers of music and their parents and their teachers. So if the industry gets together, what do we want as a five-year plan? What do we want young people in the next 5 years to learn about the music industry? And then we use young voices as a vehicle to teach those things. For myself and the Ivers, it's about teaching about songwriters and about composers behind the songs that these children are singing. But I honestly urge, you know, representatives of the industry to come forward and use young voices as a vehicle to reach 1 million young people in the next 5 years. That's an incredible opportunity that I'm really excited about.
Well, there you go. I will put your email addresses below the podcast as well, and we'll see what happens. And I'll put some links to Young Voices, and like I said, and people can check it out for themselves. Final question. We've talked a lot about music on this podcast as opposed to music business, which is nice. I'm going to ask both of you, what is your favorite piece of music if you could only listen to one thing for the rest of your life?
Wow.
Oh my goodness, that's an impossible question. Do you know what I would say without throwing another institution into the mix, but I've been talking a lot to Earth Percent about, you know, about also the earth having, you know, a percentage of song, you know, the songwriting, because the earth is our ultimate collaborator. So maybe
I've been trying to get Brian Eno on the podcast for a long time to talk about Earth Percent.
Oh my goodness.
So please put a good word in for me.
But actually, having talked, you know, thinking about climate, I would actually say the Dawn Chorus or the Sound of the Sea, the ultimate piece of music that I could not live without.
Okay, now that's a choice we've not had before. So I appreciate that. I'll include a link to the Dawn Chorus if I can find one beneath the podcast. Ben, what about you? You're only going to seem small-minded in comparison to that one, aren't you?
Totally.
If you pick Sergeant Pepper's now, it's just not going to.
No, he's going to pick some filthy drum and bass. Some filthy, filthy drum and bass.
No, I think if there's something that if I ever put it on, I would. Yeah, I would never get tired of it. It would probably be Bob Marley, Legend. It's just
okay.
It's just too good. Everyone's a banger.
Safe pair of hands there, aren't you? If you're going to listen to one album, that sounds. A couple of people have mentioned that, and it's hard to argue with that. As a fellow drum and bass aficionado, if you'd like to pick one song to put beneath the podcast, let me know.
Probably in a City Life. It's got
to be. No, I'm in strong agreement with you there. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so there we go. We've run the gamut then from children's choirs through to the Dawn Chorus and drum and bass. An ideal podcast. So thank you, Ben Lewis and Anna Phoebe.
Thank you, Derek.
So I'll put some links to the videos of the choir performances beneath the podcast, and you can check it out for yourselves, as well as links to their project. And if you found the interview useful, please do share it on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. If you'd like to get in touch with me, of course, I would like to hear from you. So please email me on joe@musically.com. We've also got a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up, knowledge from across Music Ally's wide range of services. Sign up and get that promotion, folks. Links are in the description as ever. That's it. Thank you for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow. You have been you. And until next time, farewell.